So once again, we're going to have an Agadah dealing with tshuva. This is entitled The Tshuva of Reish Lakish. We're going to start with something which may be a wee bit unfair, but it's okay. I'll explain to you why it's not fair. We will find Reish Lakish has a number of interesting things to say about tshuva, and the interesting things that he has to say about it is actually somewhat contradictory. So let's take a look at the first source. Omer Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish said. Reish Lakish stands for Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. He lived in Eretz Yisrael in the 3rd century. He's in Amora. He lives at the same time as Rabbi Yochanan. Omer Reish Lakish, Gedola Tshuva. That means tshuva is great, unless you're from California, then it would mean tshuva is awesome. Gedola Tshuva. Shezdonot na'asot lo kishkagot. That when you sin, and you did something which at the time was bizadon, you did something which was on purpose, it becomes kishogeg, it becomes as if it were an accident. So again, Reish Lakish said, tshuva is great because tshuva will turn something done which was purposeful, a sin which was done purposefully, it will turn it into an accident. Shenemar, and he quotes a verse, Shuva Yisrael, Ad Hashem Elokecha, Ki Koshalta Ba'avonecha. Return, O Israel, to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled in your sin. Koshalta would mean that you've stumbled. Ha'avon Mezidhu. Avon, Avonecha, means you did it on purpose. V'kari la michshol, and it's called a michshol. Again, a michshol is a stumbling block, right? Lifnei Iva lo titein michshol. Ki Koshalta means you stumbled. So therefore, from this verse, I can now conclude that if a person does tshuva, it will turn the sin into an accident. Then the Gemara says, "Ini or ini, is this the case?" Which means this seems to be contradicted from another opinion found in the Gemara. Now, sometimes when the Gemara asks a question like this, "Ini," it will bring in another person and another opinion and will argue with the first. In this case, the other opinion that they bring is an opinion by somebody named Reish Lakish. Eini v'ha amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish himself had said, Gedola tshuva, bless you, tshuva is great, shezdonot na'asot lo kizchuyot, that your sin becomes as if it were a zchut, and a zchut would be a merit. It becomes as if it were a mitzvah. Shenemar, it says, uvishuv rasha mirishito, that when the wicked one returns from his wickedness, and I'll give you a hint that whenever you learn Gemara, which you're not supposed to do, but when you do, you should always look up the verses, which you should be doing. You're allowed to learn Torah, right? You should look up the verses because they sometimes tend to take them out of context, or they do something else, which is a terrible assumption, and that is that they assume all people learning or reading this know the entire verse. Over here, it continues and it says, "Uveshuv rosh merishato." But you really need to see the entire verse, but it doesn't concern me that much right now. So the Gemara has a contradiction. What's the contradiction? What did Reish Lakish really say? The Gemara then gives a conclusion, a resolution. Lo kasha, there's no contradiction. Kan me'ahava, kan me'ira. That they're talking about two different types of tshuva. One type is tshuva which is motivated by love of God, and the other type is motivated by fear of God. And you realize the Gemara doesn't tell us which one is which. But you all know which one is which, right? So which one is which? When does it turn it into an accident, and when does it turn it into a mitzvah? So this is easy. And the reason why it's easy is because you all know mathematics, right? You don't know mathematics. This is greater than this, and this is greater than this. Love is greater than fear, right? What's better if your husband... Okay, we won't even go there. It's love is greater than fear, and presumably to turn something into a schut is greater than an accident. So if this is greater than this, and this is greater than this, then somehow you... There must be a name for this principle. What's it called? That's... No, Kal Vachomer is good, but I'm saying there's a math principle for this. I can make one up if you want. Can I call it the associative principle? No, but it's not the associative principle. Okay, good. I'm sure somebody has given this a name, but you all understand what I'm saying, correct? Okay. So this is easy, and therefore we can end early today, except for one question. Yeah, that's a good question, except it could be dealing with the last thing that was spoken about. So therefore, then that's why it got inverted. So that doesn't drive me completely crazy. Yeah, so there's one thing that bothers me, and that is, how does this work? Which means, what exactly are the dynamics of this? Why is it, if you do tshuva based upon fear of God, it turns it into an accident? And why is it, if you do tshuva based upon love of God, it turns it into a mitzvah? Now, this is not all that simple. Because how could something negative now be a mitzvah? And when I would ask this question, then some people would say, or put forth an answer, which is totally unsatisfactory, and that is that what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is now that they've done tshuva. Right? You can't do tshuva unless you sin. So if you want to do the mitzvah of tshuva, then you better get up and sin. Do you like that? No. No, there's something there's something troubling about that logic. I mean, I can imagine there are people sitting right now in yeshiva thinking to themselves, I will be so bored in Yom Kippur unless I do something. Okay? This is not a good plan. But if it were the mitzvah of teshuvah that we're talking about, you've also done teshuvah in the first case. In the first case, even if you were motivated by fear, you also did teshuvah. So if teshuvah was the mitzvah, if that's the zchuyot, then it should be in the first case as well, and therefore that's not really a tenable answer. You follow that? Didn't lose anyone yet? Okay, soon. So, I will attempt to show you, to explain, if possible, how it is, this is based on logic. Because, by the way, you can give me another answer, which is a better answer, or the best answer, and say, he had a verse to prove it. The verse proves it. But it's still, what we wanted to is understand the dynamics of it. We want to understand the dynamics of how something works, and not just simply say, well, that's the way that we understand the verse. Because Reish Lakish, I suspect, understood this based upon understanding spiritual dynamics, and then he found the verse which anchors the idea, rather than the other way around. That's generally the way that this would work. So now, here I will try to explain this to you, based upon a conversation between the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Okay? If you're not familiar with either of those people, you've all seen the picture of the Chafetz Chaim? No, it's not his picture, right? Anyway, or as his daughter was quoted as saying, I'm sure he was a very nice Jew, but that was not my father. There is actually a very rare picture of the Chafetz Chaim, which I have two copies of it at home. One, the original, and the other, the one that was fixed, of him sitting in front of a store in his later years. The original one actually has a woman next to it, which they took out on the other one that was publicized. Because when the Chafetz Chaim lived, it's well known that there were no women, so that would not have been a very accurate picture. But if you want a copy of the picture, you can email me and I'll send you the picture as well. I collect pictures of rabbis. Don't ask me why. So, there was once a conversation between the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Elchanan Wasserman. Have you heard of Rav Elchanan Wasserman?
Yes.
What do you know about him? Voronovich Rishi, what else do you know about him? He was a Talmud of Chafetz Chaim. What else do you know about him?
He was also murdered by the Nazis.
He was murdered by the Nazis. Anything else you know?
He came to America.
And? Why did he come to America? To raise money. Yeah, and why did he go back? Okay. That he went back to die with his students and so on and so forth is the way that they like to tell the story, and it's the way that I had heard the story originally. I once had a class, and this was a bizarre class. It was years and years ago, but all the students were non-religious. One of them was a man named Professor Alan Dershowitz, was in the class, and except for this fight that I had with him, he actually enjoyed it so much that he quoted the class in one of his later books. But I'm just like dropping names now. But this really happened. And I was giving a class about ethics about two people in the desert with one cup of water. right? And I had given the people to prepare the sources. And then I said that this is not just a question of something that can happen in the desert. Limited resources is something that can happen in all kinds of places, including there were cases in every single medicine, every single hospital, there can be issues like this. And for that matter, there were cases in the Holocaust. And as soon as I said this, there was somebody in the room who had a strange thought process, and he immediately associated this with Rav Chanan Wasserman. And he said, because I then told the story about the Belzer Rebbe, if you know the story, good. If not, I'm not going to tell a story within a story within a story. But the Belzer Rebbe was arrested with his brother. They're going to be killed, and two Hasidim went in and took their places, and the Hasidim were killed, and the Belzer Rebbe and his brother ended up escaping and coming to Israel, and the brother remarried, and the current Belzer Rebbe is the son. And again, that's a great moral question, how one can behave in such a way. What's the matter? Excuse me? I was on the bus. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, so this fellow listening to this says, yes, and Rav Chanan Wasserman went back to be killed in Europe. And I said, and Alan Dershowitz is in the room, and he had behaved till this point. A very, very lovely man on a personal level, and I had dinner with him, whatever, and he told me about O.J. Simpson and all kinds of things. And he said, well, that was a pretty stupid thing to do. So now, I sort of lost the class at this point. So I said to him, well, before Rav Chanan went back, he actually wrote a letter. He said, did you read the letter? He said, no, but it was still a dumb thing to do. So I said, Han, how can you come to a conclusion without considering all the evidence? Now, by the way, I did not see the letter either. I had no idea what the letter had said. But like this went back and forth, and like the whole room was going back and forth. And I said, you have to see evidence before you draw conclusions. And he says, but it's a stupid thing to do to go and die. And it goes back and forth. Finally, he backed down. 2 weeks later, he sent me a fax. This was when we used to have faxes. Remember that? And he said, okay, what did the letter say? But no, by that time I found the letter. Anyway, Rav Chanan Wasserman was in America in 1938. It was long before, the final solution wasn't decided upon until 1939.
He didn't know.
The whole thing was a little different than is normally told. Again, I went through an entire couple biographies about him. I went through all of his letters. I went through everything I can find about him. And Rav Chanan Wasserman actually, at the point that he wrote this letter was before the final solution. When he came to America, there were some people who said to him that maybe you should stay. And he said, he quoted the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim by World War I told people to stay in Europe and he said, go to America. You know what America was like by World War I? There were not all that many shuls, not that many shtibles at that point. And the Chafetz Chaim said, what's the logic of putting yourself in spiritual danger to avoid physical danger? He goes, who says that that's a better thing to... Now, again, that was something that he'd said all the way back by World War I. So Rav Chanan, when he was offered, again, this is 1938, he was in America. The letter, I believe, was a little bit, was around then, was still 38. And I have a copy of this letter at home if you want to see that. I can even send this to you. And that you want, okay? So, and in the letter, he was offered by the Rosh Hashiva, well, the Rosh Hashiva Tor V'Das is actually writing to him, but he was offered by YU to come and open up his own yeshiva that would be independent of the rest of YU. And he said, I've been to America. I saw what America is like. What sense is there bringing a whole bunch of students, because there's some danger here, to bring them to spiritual danger in America? So that would, but after this happened, when it became clear what was happening, the final solution, at that point he told people to get out any way you can. He himself tried to get out afterwards. So the way the story is told is not exactly historically what had taken place. And Alan Dershowitz, who was kicked out of YU's high school, and he imagined it, in his memory it was far too strict. He said he thought that place was too lenient, and he said, you know, this is a place, it was a free-thinking place, and he didn't want to bring his students to a place like this. So he said, obviously, we're dealing with somebody who has a very different perspective. But anyway, that was the dialogue that we had on this. Now, let's go back to Rav Chanan Wasserman. Rav Elchanan Wasserman is a student of the Chafetz Chaim, and he asks him the following question. This can be found in the following book called Kovitz Ma'amarim, which is a collection of articles by Rav Elchanan Wasserman. There is an article over here on tshuva, and that's what I'm quoting from. He asked the Chafetz Chaim as follows. Try to do this as briefly as we can. The Ramchal says that tshuva itself should never work. Why shouldn't tshuva work? This goes back to what we discussed last week. Why should tshuva not work? Because whatever you did, you still did. It doesn't get undid when you feel bad about it. Remorse doesn't feel something, doesn't turn something into undoing it. It doesn't change the history. The Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, writes that had it not been for God's incredible capacity for compassion, tshuva wouldn't work. Now, how do we call capacity for compassion in Hebrew? Rachamim. Had it not been for God's rachamim, you should not be able to get rid of the bad things that you've done. Okay? Second point. If you regret a bad thing that you've done, does that get rid of it? It's not a trick question. I just said this. It doesn't. Why doesn't it get rid of it? If you regret something bad that you've done, should it get rid of it? No. Why does it get rid of it anyway? Because God has rachmanos, right? What if you regret a good thing that you've done? If you regret a good thing that you've done, does it get rid of the good thing?
Yes.
Or no?
No, you did it.
If you regret the good that you've done, does it get rid of it? So the answer is, the Gemara says yes, and the Rambam writes yes, and the Rav Elchanan turns around and says to the Chafetz Chaim, I don't get it. If the Ramchal says that it's only because of God's compassion, God's compassion that gets rid of the bad that you've done, then what gets rid of the good that you've done? Is that also God's compassion? Which means either there's a rule in the spiritual universe that regret is like a big, you know that white stuff?
Delete.
The whiteout? Delete, right. That regret equals delete. And when you regret something, it deletes the thing. So if that's the spiritual rule, it has nothing to do with compassion. So how can the Ramchal say that if it wouldn't be for God's compassion, it wouldn't get rid of it, when we find that you can get rid of the good thing that you've done as well? So the Chafetz Chaim gave an answer which the Ramchal didn't like. His answer is, what? Sorry, Rav Elchanan didn't like. The Chafetz Chaim gave an answer that Rav Elchanan didn't like. Here's the answer that he gave. He says that when somebody does tshuva, the truth is they really don't regret the thing that they've done, they only regret the punishment. He says that if you would go over and tell that person, listen, I got inside information, you're not going to be punished for this, person wouldn't do tshuva. Why does a person do tshuva? A person does tshuva because they're scared of getting punished. Good. So Rav Elchanan didn't like the answer because he said sometimes people will do tshuva anyway. So he says your answer. And then he gives a whole other answer, which you can find in this book or you can find in my book, but I'm not going to go into right now. But even though Rav Elchanan didn't like the Chafetz Chaim's answer to his question, I like his answer very much for our question. Why does fear of God turn the tshuva into an accident? If you do tshuva based on fear of God, what are you afraid of? You're afraid of punishment. So therefore, what are you regretting? Are you regretting the action or are you regretting the punishment? You're regretting the action, you're regretting the punishment, which means the action is still there. So now, what do you call an action that was done that isn't going to cause punishment? An accident, a mistake. So therefore, I could say the dynamic of why when you do tshuva based upon fear, it turns it into an accident. Did you like that? Or did I work too hard to show you that? That was very good, by the way. Just in case you don't know, I mean, you should be holding up cards, at least an 8, maybe 9 on that. Right.
Is it an inbuilt morality now that Kosh Baruch Hu put it? I mean, without the connection?
It's a very interesting question, but if you do tshuva without God, it's not called tshuva, it's called rehabilitation. Right? And rehabilitation does not have the same spiritual dynamic of tshuva. Don't bother me with categories.
No, but I'm saying shkaga carries with it more. It's not a muscle.
No. Don't go into the
same
categorization is just made by people for convenience,
right?
No. He has two. By the way, the Rambam doesn't quote this in the 10 chapters of Tshuva. He doesn't quote these laws at all. It may be there, but you have to work very hard to find it. But the Rambam does not quote the laws at all of what happens if you do Tshuva by fear or by love of God. So let's continue. So what do we now understand? That tshuva done by fear turns it into an accident. Why? Because you regretted the punishment, but you did not regret the action. The action is there. What kind of action doesn't get punished? Something done by accident. Good? So now what are we still stuck with? Why, if you do tshuva based upon love of God, does it turn it into a mitzvah? Now, in order to answer this, I'm going to do something which I don't like, which is totally unfair, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm just going to warn you, don't try this at home. Okay? And what I'm about to do is to look into Reish Lakish's own life. And the reason why it isn't fair is that we would like to believe that when people give opinions or people give explanations, it's not just because of a subjective situation that they find themselves in, and we would like to believe that people's opinions will transcend their own life. Nonetheless, the reason why Reish Lakish is so interesting and such a compelling character is that he himself was a Baal Tshuva. And may I say, a real Baal Tshuva, not like the people who get all the attention, like Rabbi Akiva. Tosfot, for example, says that Rabbi Akiva was not a Baal Tshuva. He was ignorant and became educated, but he was never a sinner. He was an Am Haaretz. An Am Haaretz doesn't mean that he's a sinner. We tend to use the phrase Baal Tshuva in a very strange way in this generation. Most people who we call Baal Tshuva are not really Baal Tshuva, or probably what we would call a Tinok Shenishba, somebody who just never knew. What's a Baal Tshuva? Somebody who was a sinner and then they became spiritually rehabilitated. Reish Lakish is somebody who, as far as we can tell, and there's lots of interesting sources, and again, I know this is getting tiresome already. I have them all in the article that I wrote. We're not going to look at them all today. Reish Lakish was a man who worked in the circus. He worked as a gladiator. He was somebody who was what you would call a ruffian. He was somebody who took lives. There were gemaras about this. Reish Lakish was somebody who was involved in all kinds of things, and then one day something happens. What happened? That's our source number two. Sorry, that's our source number three. Number two is just a little bit of will be an introduction to three, but we'll look at it after we start three. So I hope you're capable of this. Source number three, Yom Achad, which means once upon a time, again, stories have to be told in the proper way. Yom Achad, once upon a time, Havakasachi Rabbi Yochanan b'Yardena. Rabbi Yochanan had gone for a swim in the Jordan River. Now, you need to know a couple things about Rabbi Yochanan. One is, he was incredibly good-looking. And that's source number two. That's source number two. It tells us about his looks. There is something interesting about source number two and about Rav Yochanan's looks, that aside from being incredibly good looking, we're told at the very end of source number two that he didn't have a beard. So he was a very good looking man who didn't have a beard. He was also apparently very big and very heavy, which in a certain point of time, and many of us don't live in the right time, was considered to be quite attractive. What can we do? All these anorexic people. The Gemara speaks of Yochanan as being one of the best-looking people ever, and also one of the heaviest ever. So let's just go with this. So once upon a time, Rav Yochanan is swimming in the Jordan River. Chazyeh Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish spies upon him. He sees him. Now, just to help all of you out with this, what is Reish Lakish thinking when he sees Rav Yochanan? Is he thinking, wow, there goes the Rosh Yeshiva from Tveria, I can go ask him a question? Or is he thinking something else? What is he thinking? What? Go ahead, what's he thinking? You can't say it, so I'll say it. He thinks he is spying upon a very attractive woman who's swimming in the Jordan. He doesn't have a beard. He sees him from afar, and he thinks it's an attractive woman in the water. I will prove this to you, if this bothers you greatly, as we continue. He sees him swimming. What does a man do when he sees a woman swimming in the water? Yes? I don't know what he does. Okay, I'm kidding. He can jump in because maybe he thinks she's drowning. He doesn't want to be a chassid shota. No, you can't do that. You could whistle, or you can do what he does. What does he do? He does an incredibly difficult dive. I don't know how to describe these dives. 3 points, I don't know, he dives. It says, Vishavar liyardena abatre, and he goes diving into the Jordan River after him. Him. Okay? Omer le, Rav Yochanan, who has realized this comedy of errors which is taking place, looks at Reish Lakish and says, Chelech liyaraita. You know, that was an incredible dive. That was really cool. That was great. You should use your strength. Use your strength for Torah. Reish Lakish responds, because now he realized that he did not find an attractive woman. He found a rabbi with a big mouth. Apparently this is before, and he says, Omer le, shufrach lenashe, and looks like yours would be better off on a woman. Okay, so now you realize where they are both coming from. Amar le, Rav Yochanan responds to this and says, I hadartabach, if you, what does hadartabach mean? If you do tshuva. If you return, hadar means return. If you do tshuva, I hadartabach, yavinalach achoti, deshapira minai. I'll introduce you to my sister, who's even better looking than I am. They still do this in Balchuvishi. No, I'm kidding. Come, we'll get you a shidduch, we'll set you up. Who would do that? Well, let's see. Should we continue the story? Let's continue the story. Kabal Ale, he accepts it upon himself, which means what does Reish Lakish say? Too many knife fights, too many late nights, too much of all this. I'm willing to try this. I'm willing to do this. It's a deal. Boy lemahader latui mane, he tries to jump back to get his mane, means his clothing or his kelim, his utensils. The lo matzi hadar, he couldn't do it anymore. So he's been a yeshiva bacher for 20 seconds. He's already a wimp. The Gemara now will skip many, many, many years or telescope them into a small amount of time. Akrei, which means he learns scripture. Va'atane, he learns Mishnah Gemara. Vishavye Gav Rabba, and he becomes a great man. Which means, how did Reish Lakish begin his yeshiva studies? He begins because he wants to meet Rav Yochanan's sister. What then happens? He starts to learn, and he ends up becoming what the Gemara attests to over here, a great man. Yoma Chad, which means
one day.
Once upon a time, one day, Havu Miflage Beit Midrasha. There was an argument in the Beit Midrash. It was quoting a brayta. Hasayif v'sakin v'pigayon v'romach u'magal yad u'magal katsir me'eimatay mekablim tum'ah. At which point do all of these utensils, these sharp utensils, at which point are they susceptible to tum'ah? which means there are laws of Tumah and Tahara, most of which we're really not that well-versed today because they don't deal that much with everyday life other than building a sukkah. So at which point do these things become susceptible to Tumah? So Rav Yochanan, we'll see, says, Mishat Gimar Melachtan. At the moment when they are completed, which means what is makabel tuma, what is susceptible tuma? Not metal, but what is a kli, a utensil. Uma'im batay gmar melachtan. From at which point are they considered to be completed? Rav Yochanan Amar mishit serfan bikivshan. At the point that you put them, I think this is called smelting. Yes, when you put them inside the oven. You put them in the, you put the metal in the oven, at that point it's completed, at that point it becomes a kli, becomes a utensil, at that point it is makabel tuma. Rish Lakish Amar, Rish Lakish argues with Rav Yochanan, and he says, Misha yachtzichan, yachtzichan b'mayim. When you put them in water after you put them in the oven. He says, no, the way to get them hard is you take them out of the oven, and then you put them in water, in cold water, and that's what completes it as a kli. Rav Yochanan says, Amar Lei, he says, Lista'a b'listayute yada. He says, basically, a robber knows his trade. Which means Reish Lakish, who spent many years using a knife, and knows the importance of having the competitive edge with your adversaries when you use a knife, he says, when it comes to robbing, lista'a, means a robber knows his trade. Which means, so he, what does this really mean? He backs down. Now, is Rav Yochanan trying to be humorous in this? Or is he trying to say, listen, many things I know about in theory. What's the theory? When they're completed. How you actually make, you know, he's not a smith, he doesn't actually make them. So he, what's he saying over here? He backs down. He backs down to Reish Lakish. What's he saying? Reish Lakish is right. By the way, was there perhaps a gentler way to say this? Yes, what could he have said? You're right. Okay, I didn't know. I'm sorry. Not supposed to remind him. Which, by the way, is the place in the Gemara that this story is being introduced. Is it? No, it's actually 20 pages later. But so I'm exaggerating. But it's the same Gemara, but at least a chapter later. Anyway, he's shocked. Amar Lei, Reish Lakish says, Umay Hanitli, what have I gained? Hatam Rabbi Karuli, when I was with the robbers, they called me master. From this, now what do you understand? That not only was he in a crime family, he was the head of it. Hacha Rabbi Karuli, now also they call me master. Amar Lei, Rav Yochanan says, "An ha'ilach da'akravinoch tachet kanfei shchina." He says, "What have you gained? You've come close to God." Cholish daiti Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan got depressed. Why did he get depressed? Why did he get depressed? Because he realized that what he said was so hurtful. Again, he was either trying to be humorous or he was trying to say, "Normally, I know, but in this case, Rav Reish Lakish knows, and he knows better than I do." But he is now depressed. By the way, before I continue, this does not have a happy ending. Cholesh Reish Lakish, but Reish Lakish got physically ill. Physically ill from this. Yes. They both got sick. One got depressed and the other got physically sick. Atai Achte, Rav Yochanan's sister comes. Oh, how is she in this whole story? She ended up marrying him. Right, so they're brothers-in-law, and they learn together. His sister comes, and it's Kabachia, and she comes crying. Amr le, asei b'shvil banai. Do something for my children, you know, that they don't become orphans. Amr le, azvoyi tomech v'ani achieh. You know, God takes care of the orphans. Asei b'shvil amunati. Do this that I won't become a widow. Amr le, v'amunotecha alai tiftachu. God takes care of the widows. Noch nafshe d'vshim ben Lakish. Reish Lakish died. He died of a broken heart. He died of being insulted. He just again, completely destroyed from this one statement from Yochanan. V'hava kamitzdar of Yochanan batrei. Rav Yochanan was so depressed because of this. Amru rabbanon man leizil leitfiladaite. What can we do in order to make him feel better? Nezer Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. They found someone else to learn with him, Elazar ben Pedat, Dimachadid and Shmaite, who was very sharp in the teachings that he had. Azul Yotiv Kameh, they brought Elazar ben Pedat to sit in front of Yochanan. Kol Milta Dehava Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Anything Rabbi Yochanan would say, Omer Leitana de Masayilach. He would say, I'll bring proof that you're right. Omer At Kibar Lakisha. He goes, you're the one who's like Resh Lakish. Bar Lakisha ki hava amina milta, when I would say something, hava makshili esrim va'arba kushyata. He would ask me 24 questions. Ufarikna le esrim va'arba peruke. And I would give him 24 answers. Umemela ravcha shmaita. And the Torah was that much greater because of his questions, got me to give all these answers. Va'ata mart tani de mesayelach. And you're going to tell me, I'll prove that you're right? I don't know that I'm right already. He walked around tearing his clothing, crying, where have you gone, Resh Lakish? Where are you, Resh Lakish? This continued, he was screaming till he became insane. The rabbis prayed for him, and Rav Yochanan died. Sad story, right? So what does all this have to do with Resh Lakish and his tshuva? I mean, the whole story didn't work out that well, did it? Why does Rav Yochanan not like Rav Elazar ben Pedat?
He's a yes man.
He's a yes man. Everything Rav Yochanan teaches, he says, you're right. And he can't stand that. Why? So why, okay, good, other way around. Why does he like Resh Lakish? What does Resh Lakish do? I want a better word. What does he do? Better word. Better word. He attacks him. Everything that Rav Yochanan says, he attacks him. He attacks him. Everything that Rav Yochanan says, he attacks him. What were the first two words that Rav Yochanan ever said to Resh Lakish? Chelech le'raita. And what does that mean? You should use your strengths, use your capability for Torah. What is Resh Lakish till this point? He's a criminal. What kind of criminal is he? He's a robber. What does he do? He attacks people. He attacks people on the side of the road. What does he use? He uses his weapons. And what does Rav Yochanan see and what does Rav Yochanan teach him? You should be using your capabilities for Torah. What ends up happening? He ends up, which means, what's the problem with Rav Elazar ben Pedat? He's a nice yeshiva boy. Would he argue with Rosh Yeshiva? Would he argue with Rav Yochanan? Chas v'shalom. Whatever Yochanan says has to be right, and he's a very smart guy, so he starts thinking whatever Yochanan says. So he's, oh, I can bring proof that you're right. And what does Rav Yochanan feel about this? He can't stand it. Who does he love? He loves Resh Lakish. And again, it's fascinating the relationship over here. They end up becoming chavrusas. They end up becoming adversaries, but they end up loving each other so much. That when one says something, this one comment, listen, have any of you ever said something that you wish you can take back after you said it? Many times. It's better to not say it, but that's not going to help any of us, including myself. Resh Lakish said something. He wished he could take it back. Who did say got depressed first? It says Yochanan. Rav Yochanan got sick. He became depressed. Listen, you know about mental illness and depression. Rav Yochanan died of depression. Do you all understand that? It says that he became so depressed, he was walking around, talking to a dead man, asking, where's Resh Lakish, where's Resh Lakish? That's what ends up happening over here. And what do the students end up doing? By the way, if the class is no good, you can all walk out. But make noise, like... What Rav Yochanan again, and the students end up praying for him, saying, "God, have mercy on this man," and they prayed for him to die, or they prayed for God to have mercy, which leads to his death. Again, this is a fascinating Gemara. But when we go back to our issue about tshuva, what's interesting here? What did Rav Yochanan say? Chelech le'raisa. Use your strength for Torah. What does he end up doing? He ends up using those very capabilities in learning Torah, and that's really where Rav Yochanan loved him. Which means when you read this whole story, you understand that Rav Yochanan sees this. He says, a guy like this, with all of these capabilities, and then you were very bothered. He can introduce him to his sister. He goes, yes, because a man like this will end up making Torah so great because of his ability to attack and to question and not just accept everything, not be like everybody else. This man is going to be great. How Rav Yochanan could have seen such a thing? I mean, that's really the amazing part over here. But the advice that he gives him ends up continuing with him. Now, based on what I've already said, I can explain a bit about Tshuv Me'ahava. How does Tshuv Me'ahava work? When you take your capabilities, which you've used to sin, and now you use them in the service of God, then in retrospect, all of those capabilities used for sin, which were fostered in sin, that were born in sin, which were developed in sin, now when they're used for a holy purpose, in retrospect, that sin becomes the foundation, in a positive way, of the positive behavior which is now being used. Did that make any sense? So I used to teach this class, and I would get up to this point, and then I would have to embellish the rest. And then I found a Gemara, completely obscure. It's not even in the Babylonian Talmud Bavli, it's in the Yerushalmi, that I think will help us understand the idea a little bit more. In source number 4, we're told the following. Rabbi Isi Itzayid V'Safsufa. Another one of the rabbis, his name is Rabbi Isi, was kidnapped. You know, if people like Hamas, Hezbollah get their hands on somebody, it's not a wonderful thing. Whoever this gang was over here, this was not going to work out all that well. Rabbi Isi is kidnapped. Somebody comes running into the Beit Midrash, finds Rabbi Yochanan, and he tells him this. Rabbi Isi was kidnapped by this gang. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, Yichrach hamet b'sadino, which means, start getting the shrouds ready, start digging the grave. That's it, he's dead. There's nothing that we can do. These guys are tough. These guys are... Omer Rav Shimon ben Lakish. Do you remember him? How do we know him by? Reish Lakish. Rav Shimon ben Lakish is Reish Lakish. Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, not so fast. Ad da ana katil, the ana mitgatel, which in our English idiom would be over my dead body. But what he says is, either I'll kill them or they'll have to kill me. Now, if any yeshiva bachar had said that, would you be impressed? When Reish Lakish says this, this is completely different. Why is this completely different? Because Reish Lakish used to be the head of one of these gangs, which means he knows something that the rest of them don't know. Is Rav Yochanan a smart man? Yes. But if a gang like this has him, so what does Rav Yochanan say? We can't do anything. What can we do? But what does Reish Lakish say? He knows how they think, and he knows how they talk, and he knows how they act, and he knows everything about them. And if this was a movie, we would have Clint Eastwood playing
a younger version.
The last time out, yeah. Playing Reish Lakish. And I think there actually was a Clint Eastwood movie like this, but it wasn't quite. But you would see Reish Lakish going back to his room, going back to his house, pulling out this old, under the floorboard, there was this, bag satchel that he has with his old weapons, and And he goes and he grabs out his old weapons and he goes and he puts them on and he goes off and he has a showdown with these people. And what ends up happening? What ends up happening? What happens is that he saves him. And that's what I said. I used to make this up until I found the Gemara. I used to make it up because I would imagine, again, not exactly this, because I imagined, and then I found this. And what does it say? He says, over my dead body. Ana azil umishazevle b'chayle. I will go and get him back with my strength, my capabilities. Azel, he goes, ufaison, he talks to these people. And this is interesting. It says that he negotiates, and he negotiates him out. Right, which means the others were afraid to talk to these people, but being that he had the strength, he said, I'll have to kill them and they'll kill me, but he ends up going there with that in mind. But when you can go and you can negotiate out of strength, right, no, it's interesting, and he gets him out. Right. Can you imagine the joy that they had? Again, they lived Tveria, Tzipori, they lived in the north. Can you imagine the joy in Tveria that day when Reish Lakish comes walking back together with Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yochanan said he's dead already. I don't know if they're saying Tehillim anymore, if they're selling a Kel Mole for him. He's dead. There's no way of getting him out. And Reish Lakish comes walking back with him. And they probably have this incredible party, and they celebrate, and they have l'chaims, and, you know, kol hakavod, and whatever else you want to say to him. If you're Reish Lakish, you know, the party ends, and you're sitting there by yourself, what are you thinking? What do you now realize? Because, again, being a Baal Tshuva is something which is very interesting. I've taught in a Baal Tshuva yeshiva for over 23 years. Many, if most, Baalei Tshuva, when the first step is one that they completely reject who they used to be. That was somebody else. Anything about the past is something which is insignificant. You know, it's interesting. I had a very interesting experience this week. I went to meet with somebody, and I interviewed him, I spoke to him, and I wrote an article about him. It was somebody who sat in prison for either murder or manslaughter. He killed somebody. He was originally charged with murder. They got it down to manslaughter. He claimed self-defense. And I asked him what his opinion is about Tshuva Me'ahava, how it works. So he said to me something which I didn't find as impressive about what I taught you, but what he said was interesting, because I wanted to know, can he use something from the past, what I'm suggesting? He said, Tshuva Me'ahava is that you love God so much that you hate sin. Okay, I thought that was a very, very interesting. As I said, this man sat, got into a fight in a bar, killed somebody, and today is a religious man, religious family, and his story of his tshuva is really an amazing story. But that was his answer: is that you love God so much that you hate sin. But when I picture Reish Lakish now, it could very well be that the first stage you reject your capabilities. Prove it to me. How do I know Reish Lakish rejected his capabilities at the first stage? Couldn't even jump back anymore. It says it. It says it in the story. He goes jumping in. He accepts upon himself Torah. He tries to jump back. He can't do it anymore. That's not him anymore. That's somebody else. That's the first stage. He rejected who he was. But what does he end up doing? And I'm saying that's what's fascinating. He ends up using his capabilities. Now, just because he was using all of his capabilities doesn't mean that he was necessarily in touch with it. I would assume that when this story takes place, he now realizes that had he never been a criminal, had he never been a robber, had he not known how to use a knife and a sword, had he not been a gladiator, he would not have been able to save this person's life. So what is it that saved Rav Isi's life? What saves his life is because of Reish Lakish used to be a criminal. So now, when a person has done tshuva, which is tshuva, which is out of love of God, and let's be honest, that first stage of tshuva, is it necessarily out of love of God? That first stage of tshuva, he wants the broad, right? That first stage of tshuva, he wants the girl. The first stage of tshuva, yeah, she's really good looking, you'll set me up, whatever, which means, and even at that point he rejects who he is, but tshuva is also a work in progress. But the Reish Lakish who ends up by the end, what do we see about him? He's using his capabilities as that outsider, as the person who doesn't accept everything that Rav Yochanan says. And again, the beautiful thing is Reish Lakish saw this before we began, and he loved him for it. And then when it was destroyed because of something that Rav Yochanan said, Rav Yochanan was devastated by it. Again, one phrase, a robber knows his trade, ends up destroying the lives of two people. Again, just to think about it, it's an amazing thing. But I would imagine that Reish Lakish, on this day, when he comes back and they have the celebration and he comes to the realization that it was only because of his sins that he was able to save the life of Isi, I would assume at that point he says, great is tshuva, or tshuva is awesome. Why? Because if you do tshuva out of love of God, and now once it's love of God, what does that mean? Why is he going off to save Rav Isi? That's not fear. Why is he going to save Rav Isi? Because he knows it's the right thing to do. He's willing to put himself in danger. It used to be he would only put himself in danger to take things from other people, only to rob people. But now he's willing to do this because he knows that, again, he caught all the psukim for you. He knows about haftar chamocha v'lo samar adam reyecha, and he can keep on going. Why is he doing this now? He's doing this because he knows that this is the moral thing to do. And now he realizes that when you do tshuva, out of love of God, it turns the past into zchuyos, into mitzvot, because the sins that you've done could very well be the foundation of the actions that you're doing now. And that, as I said, is an incredible love of tshuva. And if what I'm saying is correct, now we understand the dynamic, exactly how this works. You do tshuva based upon fear of God. What are you rejecting? What are you rejecting? You're rejecting the punishment. Action is still there. Action is still there. It's like an accident. You do tshuva based upon love of God. If you love God, so all the things that I've done, there must be some way I can serve God. There must be some way I can serve God through all of my capabilities. There must be some way I can serve God through all of my experiences. There must be some way I can serve God through all my negative experiences. This fellow that I met did tell me that he speaks to young people all the time, and he warns them about getting in the wrong crowd, and he warns them about, again, all kinds of behaviors. They look at him as some kind of guy who learned in yeshiva his whole life. They don't know about his past. But because of the things that he had ended up doing, he warns them about that. But he wouldn't, again, I wasn't going to give him a whole Musar thing. I was listening to what he had to say. It was very difficult for him to go into tell the entire story. But as I said, if you want to read this, it's an unbelievable story. Yeah. I told you. It's a sad story. And it could be if anyone else had said this, it could be that he would have been able to take it. But for Rav Yochanan, after all these years, to say this, you know, I also have a question in my mind when I read this. Are there other people in the room, or is there no one else in the room? Again, you can start reading it different ways, but I think that he found this just so devastating. Just so devastating when Rav Yochanan said this. Reish Lakish is somebody. Again, he's just a fascinating character, but he's a person who's a real Baal Tshuva, but not just he's a Baal Tshuva. He's a person who was able to go back and to use his previous experiences and use them to serve God and ultimately to save somebody's life. Okay, ladies, we will continue next week.